The holidays are expensive. You're paying for gifts, travel, decorations, food, and before you know it, you've blown way past what you were planning to spend. Don't start the new year off with bad money vibes. Download Rocket Money to stay on top of your finances. The app pulls your income, expenses, and upcoming charges into one place so you can get the clearest picture of your money. It shows how much to set aside for bills and how much is safe to spend for the month so you can spend with confidence. No guesswork needed. Get alerts before bills hit, track budgets, and see every subscription you're paying for. Rocket Money also finds extra ways to save you money by canceling subscriptions you're not using and negotiating lower bills for you. On average, Rocket Money users can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Start the year off right by taking control of your finances. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
There are over 200,000 unsolved homicides in the United States justice system right now. And many of those cases haven't seen the light of day in years, decades in some instances. The case files and evidence are sitting in a box on a dusty shelf in a basement, forgotten by law enforcement and the media, while the families and friends left behind wait for answers and fight for justice. Sometimes there is nobody left to remember or to speak up on behalf of the victim. I'm Arlene.
And I'm Leah. And that is exactly what Box in the Basement sets out to do, to shine a light on those forgotten victims and to bring attention to unsolved murders and disappearances. We want to help families tell their stories, and we want to assist the families and friends of victims find the resources and support they need to continue their fight for justice. Join us every
Thursday
for new episodes of Box in the Basement, wherever you find your podcasts.
Darkcast Network, bringing our indie podcasts out of the shadows.
Greetings, witches and beautiful souls. Welcome to the Bell Witch Podcast, Witching in the 21st Century with me, Swales, Friendly Green Witch. This is episode 52. No, this is episode 53. That's right. And it is a delightful solitary witch episode because I am well overdue a solitary witch episode. And this one is going to be all about the sigil. I've been promising the sigil episode for quite some time. And so this is going to be the one that I've been on about, and hopefully it'll be as good as I hope it to be. But first, I need to thank my amazing Patreons because my Patreon has started having a little bit of a boom, which is just so lovely. I'm really happy that people are finding it and signing up. And I'm going to list them now. A big thank you to Juniper Berry for upgrading. That really does make me so happy. Nick MC, Amanda, Natalie, Terry, Natasha Gill, Ruth Young, Lena Lady, Jess the Cat, Michelle Hickerman, and Nancy. Thank you very much for joining me on the Bell Witch Podcast Patreon. I hope you like it here and you're enjoying the abundance of bonus content such as behind the scenes interviews, exclusive readouts, mini podcast episodes, poetry, etc. Also, there's assorted journal entries and What the TikToks. Although I haven't done a What the TikTok for a while. I'm a bit cross with TikTok since that clone account, they did nothing about it, so I've started to retreat away from it for a little bit, but I'm sure when I get over it myself I'll get back on there and start doing more What the TikToks. Speaking of TikTok, I actually won a competition recently, a load of ghost hunting equipment from a lovely little Kent based paranormal company called KPI. You can find them on TikTok at Kent Paranormal. Thank you so much. I were proper chuffed when I saw that I'd won on the big spinning wheelie thing that people do online. It's great. I'm one of those people that my friends say to me often, like, gosh, you win everything, you. You're so lucky. And I've always been that kind of lucky witch. And I thank my stars for that. I really do. Anywho, as you know, the Bell Witch podcast is now 2 years old. And I'm so excited for the future. And we've got some amazing guests lined up. It's going to be so awesome. It's amazing that I'm still going. Thou shall not pod fade. Sigils, eh? What even is a sigil? To put it simple, a sigil is a symbolic representation of an energy, an intention, a statement, or a word that, when activated, helps manifest the energy and the state of the presence that it represents. It sends a powerful message to your own subconscious and also the spirits or the universe, or the higher realms, whatever you call it. It helps to communicate your desires that you wish to manifest. And anybody can use them. It's not just a witch thing. And people do use them. I mean, when you look around and you see logos everywhere, Bluetooth logo is a fantastic example of a little hidden sigil there in commonplace of today's society. So the Bluetooth sigil is actually a mixture of two Nordic runes that represent an initial of a name from the Viking era, Nordic H and Nordic B. According to one of the engineers behind the development of Bluetooth, the name belongs to a Viking era king with a bad tooth. So it's actually named after the 10th century king of Denmark. Don't you think that's so cool? I haven't done this for a while, but I'm going to share a soundbite because it sums it up really well and I find it so intriguing. This is from I Am David Christiansen on Instagram. And if you're on Instagram, I highly recommend you go follow David Christiansen because he's this really cool, knowledgeable, Viking-esque fella, and he's just really friendly and I learn lots from him, and he's a massive inspiration of mine, so I'm proper tooting his horn. I'll link him in the show notes below and just have a listen to this soundbite. It's really cool.
This is the Bluetooth symbol, named after Harald Bluetooth. He was a 10th century Danish king, a Viking. He was known for uniting Denmark with parts of Norway, bringing them all under one single rule, one king. The Bluetooth logo is a combination of two younger Futhark runes, Hagalas representing H, and Bjarkan or Berkna as a B. Harald Bluetooth, the Bluetooth logo. Now, the symbol was created by Jim Kardach. He created this symbol because he was inspired by Harald Bluetooth, since his achievements were unifying. And this is the wireless unifying standard. And this symbol was created back in 1997. This symbol can represent how unifying technology is. So this symbol started with Harald Bluetooth uniting.
And this is an example of how the meaning behind a symbol's journey or a sigil's journey can give it power into what its directive is, the story behind it. And in this case, it's actually anchored in history, which I think gives it even more power. So yeah, it's named after a Nordic king with a bad tooth. And like all the best ideas, the guys who invented it came up with that name, catchy as it is, over a beer in the pub. So that's awesome. I like that. The word sigil derives from the Latin sigillum, meaning seal, and is also likely related to the Hebrew singular meaning word, action, talisman. In medieval systems of ceremonial magic, a sigil was the symbol of a specific entity, like an angel or a demon or a god, whichever allowed the magician to summon and control the entity. But in modern magical systems, a sigil is often used in magical work to represent a specific intention and helps to give shape and intention to a thought form. When looking into the history of sigils. I mean, it could be an entire series of its own, to be honest. There is just so much of it. Sigil magic has been around for absolutely millennia. It is so old. And it's said that one of the first ever recorded sigils in history is from 3000 to 2000 BCE. That seems like the wrong way around to me, but that's how it's written here, so okay then. Sigils in ancient Mesopotamia. Wow, that's a big word. Among the most earliest known uses of the sigil were from the ancient civilizations of, what I've just said, dating back to around the 3rd millennium BCE. This includes Sumerian Akkadian, Babylon and Assyrian cultures. The sigils were often inscribed in amulets and talisman for protections and good fortune. The Queen of the Night Relief, a prominent example of an early sigil use, serves as evidence of these practices. Then you've got 2686 to 2181 BCE, sigils in the ancient Egypt temples and stuff, hieroglyphics and divine energies. The Egyptians made extensive use of sigils with practices rooted in early Old Kingdom periods. Hieroglyphic symbols, potent with magical significance, were often used as sigils, spells and rituals connecting religious beliefs, magics and symbolism. The Egyptians would use them to communicate with their own deities, enhance the magic that they thought lived within the paintings of the Egyptian temples. 200 BCE to 500 CE. In the Roman period, from the 2nd century BCE to the 5th century CE, saw the incorporation of sigils into magical practices. The Greek magical papyri, or PGM, whatever that means, an anthology of texts from this period showcases various symbols used in rituals and spells. In ancient Rome, the Sator Square, which is a palindromic formation, apparently, whatever that means. I'm not very good at this, I'm sorry I'm butchering it. Believed to process protective and magical properties, was frequently used as a sigil. It's one of the oldest and most famous examples of a magic square symbol. Ah, there you go. So that's the symbol that people use as a grid to create a sigil. And this is from snb.com, which is a delightful little read about early use of sigils, a brief history. There's a lot more on there if you want to go and have a read. It is a really good website for all this. And as always, I will credit my sources in the show notes below, put all the links so you can go and have a read for yourself. In Nordic mythology, runes were used as magical symbols to communicate with gods and spirits, and in Chinese culture, talisman and seals were used to protect against evil spirits and bring good fortune. Native American tribes used symbols and sigils, glyphs, in their rituals and ceremonies to connect with the spirit world. The use of sigils in different cultures highlights the universal belief in the power of the symbols to influence the physical and the spiritual realms. In the medieval Europe, sigils were employed in ceremonial magic and alchemy. And then there's a lot of evidence about sigil life as a tool of higher magic throughout history, with the magicians and the alchemists behind closed doors, and it seems to have got adopted by lower magic practitioners like me throughout the centuries. In alchemy, a word or a statement may be reduced to a single symbol, aka sigil, to use as a quick reference for a ritual. The Renaissance saw a resurge of interest in sigil magic, with scholars and magicians incorporating sigils into their rituals and experiments in alchemy. The ancient practice of transmuting base metals into gold and achieving spiritual enlightenment has a significant influence on the sigil magics. Alchemists believe that sigils and symbols held the keys to unlocking secrets of the universe and achieving personal transformations. The use of a sigil in alchemical rituals and experiments was thought to facilitate the process of inner alchemy, where the practitioner sought to purify their soul and attain spiritual perfection. And then during the 20th century, sigil magic experienced a massive revival and a boost in interest with the rise of the modern occultism that was going on with Golden Dawn and all that jazz, and publications of Gilmore's and occult texts that detailed the creation and use of sigils in magical practices. There was a method called the Spaz technique used to create this method of achieving a sigil, which is a method of creating a sigil that was developed by Austin Osman Spar right around the turn of the 20th century. The method is you start with a clear statement of your desire, remove the duplicate letters and vowels, or rearrange the remaining letters into an abstract symbol. And I think back then they were very big in chaos magic circles, which scare me to death, and it's probably a good podcast episode about chaos magic, but we'll see. And so, as you can hear, the sigil has had a jolly little journey throughout the centuries, transforming on its way. Magically evolved over the centuries, adapting different beliefs and practices from its early roots in ancient civilization to modern day revivals in the occult circles. And that was a very, very brief, basic history evolving sigil witchery. Just a reminder, I am not an historian. I didn't even get GCSE English, and therefore this kind of stuff is actually really out of my comfort zone and quite hard for me to process in order in the correct manner. So I've done my best. I hope it's all right for you, and I definitely invite you to have a look at the history because it is absolutely fascinating and it's absolutely massive. So it would be a right rabbit hole for you to fall down. Are you ready to sip on something extraordinary? May I introduce the tea tonic, where every cup is crafted with care, nature's finest ingredients, and a touch of magic. The tea tonic is 100% natural and have a wide range of single leaf teas, unique blends, all handmade to order using their specially designed recipes. The tea tonic use fully compostable and recyclable packaging and can also create bespoke blends just for you. Visit theteatonic.com and receive 10% off your entire order with the affiliate code BELLWITCH. But now I want to focus on actually your practice and working with sigils today, rather than focus on the history so much. I'm interested in the practical side of applying sigil magic to your living magic right now. I remember like yesterday when I first got introduced to the magic of sigils. Little did I know just how big the impact this little sigil would have on my witchcraft practice. And I first got introduced at a regular moon circle that I used to drive to every month, held in York, run by some lovely punky families. Every month it was a different activity, from journaling to creating offering bowls out of clay, in bell tents and around fires and in kitchens around the table. And there was one evening we ended up making bread, finished off with our very own personal sigil. And I'd never heard of a sigil before, I had no idea what it was. And the whole process of creating the sigil and drawing it on the bread, baking the bread and eating it, really enchanted me, and I just fell in love with the process. I really did. It made such a big impact on my life. And that very first sigil that I designed, that I put on bread and ate, was a sigil for growth. It was just such a basic looking sigil, and it kind of looks like a little person, and you can see that it's GTH with like a little person in the middle. And I actually have that tattooed on my arm. Like, it really is that important to me. My first ever sigil ever. And every time I look in the mirror, I can see it, and I think that powers it up. So as you know, a lot of my main magic is sigils. And in my Q&A, I mentioned the sigil for her home birth. And then Sally Golightly's sigil that I did to sell her house worked really quick. And the act of doing a sigil is just so fluid and organic. When people ask me how I do them, I don't really know the answer. They just kind of come about on their own. I mean, I'll start with the client asking them exactly what they want from this sigil, and we'll pin it down to a sentence that's really pared down, you know, to the bare bones of what they want to manifest. And then there's no room for the universe to misinterpret it. And then I'll go away with this sentence and play with the letters in it. And there is a few techniques into physically creating the sigil. Some witches cross out the vowels or the consonants or even the letters they just don't like, keeping it completely random and just following instincts, moving the page around and looking for patterns within the letters that are left. Some people use an actual chart graph thing that represents different planets and grids with numbers and letters in, and they literally spell it out, the word on the grid, and that creates a very different looking sigil. A lot more straight and rigid in its appearance. And if that works for you, that's great. I mean, I don't really like that. It's a bit too mathematic for me, if I'm honest. I enjoy the fluidity of taking the letters and just playing with them. And then some weird shift happens as I'm sat there in my circle doodling. It's kind of like when you do something automatic, you know, when you're not really paying attention. A bit like when you're mindless driving or something like that. I can tell, you know, when it started to grow, it feels different. It suddenly becomes something else. It is so weird, really. And I'll turn it and add bits and take bits away and add lines and dots and stars depending on what the sigil does. And then all of a sudden it's there. It's like there's no denying it. There's no mistaking it. It's really weird. It's really powerful. Put a ring around it and I know that's the one. And it happens like that for a lot of them. And it's never a case of, ooh, that might be it. It looks all right. It's just like, yep, that's it. That's the one. I think my sigils do have a certain type of look to them because of my magic and my skill set and how I create a sigil. But then I'll go further. When I've got that sigil, I'll reiki it. I'll imagine it glowing when I ring bells or cleanse it with smoke, incense or sage. Put it on a scroll and then I'll probably write a spell that accompanies the sigil. So you say a spell as you stare at the sigil. Sometimes it's a jar as well, so that sigil ends up going in a jar or on a jar, and all the corresponding herbs and the colours and the gemstones that work with the sigil spell for the outcome, they all go together and they all complement each other. And this takes quite a long time to create a sigil for me, a whole spell jar is an all-night thing, you know, from 7 o'clock probably till midnight in my circle, because it is such a powerful tool. And then I'll tend to sit it on my altar for a little bit, usually a week, and talk to it, reiki it. And then again, I'll know when it's ready to send off to the clients, and I'll put it in a wax-sealed envelope with probably some accessories, some gemstones, some herbs, and then post it to them. And then the idea is the client has the sigil and can use that sigil however they like. They can just get it out and stare at it and read what I've written and put it on the mantelpiece among the souvenirs, tattoo it. They could put it in dirt. They can write it on windows. They could put it in makeup, in foundation, and rub it into the skin. They can put it on biscuits with food colouring or in buns, all sorts. One of the massive reasons I love sigils is because they're just so versatile. You can do anything with a sigil. You can put it anywhere, wherever you can physically draw, not even leave a mark, but where you can physically draw an action. The physicality of drawing the shape of the sigil in the air is such good magic. I mean, I even trace a sigil with my finger on my goldfish bowl, you know, for healthy fish. And I've had these fishes for ages now. Don't want to jinx it. But I think a big part of that is because I sigil my fish every time I clean them out. You know, I hear people say they stir it in the coffee and they put it in the food. And I think some people said that they put it on a coaster. So every time you put your cup on the coaster, the sigil is like boosting the cup up, which I just love. Art as well, if you do journaling, if you're an artist, you can hide sigils under the art. If you are a witchy artist, like Naomi mentioned in the interview about her witchy art, she did mention sigils and runes, which she puts in and then she paints over them, because even though you can't see the sigil, the magic is still there and it is still working regardless. But this theory divides a lot of people. I read it often on places like Reddit and personal blogs on the old tinterwebs. Some think the way the sigil works is a bit like manifesting magic. You create it and then you forget about it. And a sigil may work that way. I disagree. I think it's good to see a sigil and think about it often. Seeing it doesn't take away from it, in my opinion. Seeing it empowers it. But also thinking about it empowers it. If you know it's there, you can't see it, then it is absolutely as strong. I don't believe you create a sigil and then you burn it and you never see it again and that's how it works. That makes no sense in my mind. And also, I don't understand burning sigils, because to me, burning is a ritual of banishing and letting go and sending away. So when witches burn stuff, I'm like, to draw it to you, I don't believe burning stuff draws it to you. I believe it releases it out and makes it go away. And also, burning is good for offerings, because it's like you're giving it to the flame as an offering, and that's probably being sent to the higher realms or whatnot. So I suppose you could do a sigil as an offering for a goddess, and that would make sense to me, because the sigil you're creating isn't to work for you, but it's to work for a deity in the other realm. So it's not like don't ever burn a sigil. It's got to think about what the sigil's directive is, whether you burn a sigil or not. I hope this makes sense. That's just my personal understanding and magic theory of swales as sigils, I guess. If you disagree with the swales, that's all right. It's right for you. It's valid. It's fine. Witchcraft is like that. There's room for all opinions and all theories, and it's another reason why I love it so much. And then I believe, for my sigils, I like to charge them up with extra boosts of magic. And there is so many ways you can do this, which I just love as well. I tend to reiki them. And I imagine them glowing, especially alongside the ringing of a bell. And they can glow different colours depending on what their intention is. This works really powerful for me. You can also incorporate colour as well. Do coloured inks. A sigil for love could be done in pink or red. A sigil for good luck could be done in green. A sigil for connecting to the divine could be blue. So, you know, you can make it as deep, as complicated, or as simple as you like. I always do my sigils in black. The only reason for this is because I've got a special magic ink that I use for my magic workings, all of my magic workings. And if I'm honest, I do feel like I'm missing a bit of a trick here by not using different coloured inks. So I might have to look into that, because it does seem like such an obvious way now of getting an extra layer of magic in there via colour correspondence. You see, I'm not just learning you, I'm learning me and all. I'm learning on the job. It's so good. And there's other ways, such as usual stuff, you know, clapping, chanting, talking to it. But I read on Reddit just recently, quite an interesting way that's come up is using gnosis, is it? Gnosis. So I'm going to read this to you. Unfortunately, I can't credit the witch because it says deleted where their name is supposed to be. But it's on the witchcraft feed 2 years ago. The best and easiest way for many people to reach Gnosis is organism. I'm going to say organism instead of the word because I don't want to get cancelled. So this is climaxing whilst staring at your sigil, basically, to power it up. And that's the sexy magic. Do some organisms. Let's move on. Visualize your sigil when you meditate. See it in your daydreams or whatever you retreat to while you meditate. Basically take it with you to the higher realm. Because it's giving it that extra dimension, isn't it? It's like, it's further than visualizing it. It's taking it to like the REM state, the higher self. It's giving it that extra spiritual layer, I guess. Okay, what next? Shall we dissect a sigil? Well, what do you put in a sigil? What shapes and stuff? It's like, well, when you look at shapes and sigils and dots and stars and swirls, what do they mean to you? Have you noticed when you doodle on a pad when you're on the phone, or in the olden days anyway, when you stood there with cord? Historically, that is probably when I did the most doodles and sigils without me even knowing. I do draw countless spirals on notepads, and randomly when I'm in classes and stuff, I always draw spirals and hearts. And I used to draw loads of boxes, although I don't do that anymore. Maybe because I don't feel so trapped anymore, perhaps. I believe that me drawing these spirals and hearts was an act of magic without me even realising it. They were a type of early sigil to help me concentrate, to help me progress through the class or the conversation, or just to keep me focused. It was a tiny little ritual to keep me grounded in the moment. I have this amazing book on sigil witchery by Laura Tempest Zakroff. And she actually talks about the spiral and what it may represent in the terms of sigil making. And this is what made me put two and two together, really. So from this book, Sigil Witchery, the spiral represents inspiration and mythical journeys moving towards the centre, as well as coming away from it, like the labyrinths that you may have walked at witch festivals. The spiral is about the unfolding journey. A spiral can travel in both directions, and the spiral allows energy to flow freely and steadily. Like the energy of a spiral is pulling energy inwards as well as outwards. It reminds me of a snail taking its time, living on its own back, or a snake coiled up asleep in its natural state. They're definitely about extending energy, isn't it? Take the hexagons. If you draw a lot of hexagons, that's found in the beehive. That's about working as a team and depending on each other and making a structure that's sound and reliable. Teamwork is the dream work. Hearts. I draw a lot of hearts as well. And I think these represent the love and connection in friends and family. Maybe even heart elf or romance or something about blood, perhaps. You see what I mean? It's all about your personal interpretation of the shapes that you doodle, or when you see them, what they bring to mind. A simple dot even has so much meaning to it. Like, it's literally the beginning of marks, isn't it? It's when you put your pen on the paper, you're going to move it. So it's like the fool of the doodle. The fool card. The beginning of everything is the dot on the page. And I do put a lot of dots in my sigils for new beginnings. Even a line. The line is just a dot that went for a walk. So to me, that's a journey, or representing a figure. A figure shape, like a stick man. Of course, there's the pentacle. I put a lot of pentacles in my sigils because that represents my witchcraft. The signs for the elements, earth, air, fire, water, you know, the triangles, inverted and right way around with lines through them, they are sigils and they work incredibly well. And I like the triangle because the triangle represents the fire. And you know, the fire represents passion, action, being quick, being forceful, adding heat to a situation, getting stuff moving, getting out of a rut. Arrows, direction, crosses, where to go, X marks the spot. Zigzags to me are very aggressive and they kind of remind me of electric, static, chomping through something, I guess like a saw. You know, again, quite angry and forceful, a bit like the fire element. I invite you right now just to pause, if you can, and just have a think about your doodles or the shapes that you see around, you know, like the basic shapes. Do you have any connection? Do you have any interpretation of these shapes? You know, and if you do, do you use them in your sigil magic? And if you don't, then why not? Maybe you could start trying. It's just interesting food for thought there. Okay, so how can you use the sigil? What can you apply it to? Let's reframe that question and say, what can't you use symbols for? It really is that diverse. I mean, I love the ideas that are in this book about like sewing sigils, you know, like embroidery, making jewellery, making sigil jewellery, the vanishing sigils where you put them on your doorstep in chalk, the elements, the weather or people visiting slowly take them away, draw them in salt, draw them in earth, putting down birdseed in a sigil shape. How beautiful is that? I just love it. You could even physically plant a sigil shape in your garden with seeds and they could grow in that shape. A sigil for a nice thriving garden. That's what I visualise with that one. I actually made one for successful packaging posting when I was high on Depop sales. I've made a little sigil, and if you've bought anything from me, you'll have seen it. It's like a square with a cross through it with arrows on each end. And as I draw it, I say a little rhyme, like a little spell. And now I just can't not do that because it's just so ingrained into me when I post parcels or letters. But it works. I mean, I can't honestly recall a package going missing since I've started applying this post sigil. And I keep meaning to create a sigil for my jogging. Maybe do a sigil that's split in half, you know, like a mirrored sigil. And then I could put one in or on each trainer. And it'll hopefully help me bounce as I run, you know, like give me lots of energy. That's a sigil that's on my sigil to-do list. It is a very big list and it carries on growing. It all makes sense when you sit and think about it. And it is such a personal journey. So these are just guidelines. I mean, if you've got different interpretations of your doodles, then they're right because they're yours. And I'd say trust the process, trust your intuition. There's no hard, fast rules. If you've got a good intent and a reason for creating the sigil and you're going to use it with power, love and respect, and you're going to interact with it, however that may be, then yeah, go for it and it'll be amazing. And again, if you do create sigils off the back of hearing this podcast episode, please tag me or use the Bellwitch podcast hashtag TBWP. If you've got any sigils that you're very proud of that you're willing to share, please share them. I'd love to see them. I'd love to geek out over all the sigils. Be great to connect with you, dear listener. Thank you so much for listening to this sigil episode from Swales, the Friendly Green Witch. Find me on social medias, the Bell Witch podcast, separated by underscores. You can use the new hashtag or you can email me at thebellwitchpodcast@yahoo.com. Send me a trailer if you've got a new podcast or even an established one. I'd love to connect with you. I love to support other podcasts, witchy podcasts, spooky podcasts. I love them all, me. And if you've got a topic you'd like me to cover or you'd love to come on as a guest and you can talk for England about a pagan or spiritually related topic, send me an email. Let's make it happen. I absolutely love to interview guests. It is one of my favourite parts of the podcasting gig. And if you are loving the Bellwitch podcast, you can leave me reviews and ratings wherever you listen to your podcasts. I'm also on buymeacoffee.com. Just search Swales. Everything received is greatly valued and hugely appreciated. Music by Jeff Harvey of Pixabay. The official Bell Witch photographer is the lovely Beverly Thornton. Thank you so much for choosing the Bell Witch podcast to fill your ears. Stay magical, witches.
Have you heard about the Whimsy Goth Market in London? A brand spanking new market for the weird and magical. Held at Cecile Sharp House in Camden. A space created where individuality is celebrated and small businesses are supported. Where all subcultures can come together, feel safe, welcome and included. For more information on this magical event, visit www.thewhimsygothmarket.uk.